This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during September. This month, we celebrate the equinox, stalk the harvest moon, check in with Venus, Jupiter, and Saturn, and explore the stars of the summer triangle. So grab your curiosity and come along with me on this month's Sky Tour. If you live in the Northern Hemisphere, by now you've surely noticed that the daylight hours are getting shorter. Back in July, the change was oh so subtle. But now we're losing a couple of minutes of sun each day, more so if you live farther north. So it is with mixed emotions that I tell you that the equinox falls on September 22nd at 3:21 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. On this date, the sun momentarily shines directly down on Earth's equator as it heads south in declination. Equinox comes from the Latin word equinoctium, meaning equal nights. So days and nights everywhere are both 12 hours long, and the sun rises due east and sets due west, no matter where you are. This month, we just miss having a full moon fall on the equinox. It happens 2 days sooner, September 20th. This is the harvest moon, the name traditionally given to the full moon closest to the equinox. We call this the harvest moon because, at this time of year, the nearly full moon rises only about a half hour later on each succeeding evening, as opposed to the usual 50 minutes later. It has to do with the shallow slant of the moon's orbit with respect to the eastern horizon right now. Anyway, this geometry gives farmers a little extra late evening light for harvesting their crops, hence the name. The harvest moon usually occurs in September, but not always. For example, last year it came on October 1st. What's interesting is that this year it happens just before the equinox. And since full moons occur every 29 and a half days, it turns out that we'll have four full moons between the solstice, back on June 20th, and this month's equinox. And that complicates the sequence of traditional names associated with full moons in specific months. That extra one has to be dealt with somehow, and as you might remember from my Sky Tour last month, the full moon in August, the third in this sequence of four, would traditionally be called a blue moon, because it doesn't happen very often. And that is the original definition of blue moon, not the one used nowadays when two full moons occur in a single month. We're enjoying a fine evening performance of bright planets right now. One of them, and maybe a second, you'll have to track down soon after sunset. First, find a spot with a clear view toward west. Watch where the sun sets, and remember it'll set due west on the equinox. And starting about 30 minutes after sundown, look to its upper left. You should spot brilliant Venus gleaming through the bright twilight. Heck, set up a little challenge for yourself. How soon after sunset can you spot Venus? Just don't wait too long, because Venus itself sets about 90 minutes after sundown. It's not obvious, but lurking in the twilight globe between Venus and the sun are two other planets. Mars is one of them, but it's hopelessly faint. You have a better chance of spotting Mercury, but it'll be a challenge too. Technically, this fast-moving inner planet is farthest from the sun on the 14th, but even then, it'll be deep in the twilight. If your sky is super clear and haze-free on September 8th, look for a razor-thin crescent moon very low in the west. Look to that crescent's lower left by about half the width of your clenched fist held at arm's length. Mercury will be there, though it might be tough to see. By the way, one night later, on the 9th, that crescent moon will pair beautifully with Venus. Now don't fret if you can't spot Mercury. There are easier planets to find tonight. Let the sky get a little darker, and then do an about-face so you're looking directly opposite the sunset point. That bright star hovering over the eastern horizon is actually the planet Jupiter. The king of planets isn't as bright as Venus, but the sky is darker over in the east, and so it stands out better. There's another little challenge for you. Which can you see first, Venus or Jupiter? As the darkness deepens, look to Jupiter's upper right for a beacon that's somewhat dimmer but still pretty obvious. That's Saturn. The moon passes through this area in mid-September, sitting a bit below Saturn on the 16th and not far from Jupiter on the 17th. So, if you've been paying attention, all five of the planets that you can see by eye are above the horizon at sundown. Okay, you have no chance to see Mars and probably not Mercury either. But still, all five are up after sundown during the first half of September. Summer might be ending astronomically, but most of summer's stars can still be seen. Topping the list is a trio of bright stars collectively called the Summer Triangle. Finding them is easy, even if your backyard is hopelessly awash in light pollution. Lift your gaze up, way up, to find a bright star that's almost directly overhead. That's Vega, or as some stargazers say, Vega. Anyway, it's in the constellation Lyra, the Lyre, and it's relatively close as stars go, just 25 light-years away. Vega and its relative closeness to us figure prominently in Contact, one of my very favorite movies. Astronomers gauge a star's brightness by a number called its magnitude, and Vega is an important star in this scheme. Some 2100 years ago, an ancient Greek astronomer named Hipparchus decided to create a method for organizing stars according to their brightness. He called the most luminous ones stars of the first magnitude, and he ranked the fainter ones second, third, fourth, and fifth, like the prize order in a contest. The ones that are sixth magnitude mark the limit of visibility with the eye. Now, modern astronomers have assigned Vega the magnitude of 0.00. It turns out that four other nighttime stars are brighter than Vega, and so their magnitudes are negative. One of them is in the evening sky during September. I'll reveal its identity in a bit, but look around for yourself to see if you can figure out which one it is. If you're looking up at Vega, you should also be seeing the other two corners of the Summer Triangle. One is to the south of Vega by about three times the width of your fist. That's Altair, and it's the main star in the constellation Aquila, the eagle. The name Altair, an Arabic word, means the flying eagle and has been in use since medieval times. The third star is about two fists from Vega toward east. That star is called Deneb, a westernized version of the Arabic phrase for hen's tail. Now, Deneb does mark the tail of a bird, but it's a graceful swan, the constellation Cygnus. At the swan's other end is a medium bright star called Albireo, Arabic for hen's beak, and it lies close to the middle of the Summer Triangle. Now, in between Deneb and Albireo, in Cygnus, is a row of three stars that mark the swan's body. The brightest of these, and the one closest to Deneb, is named Seder, Arabic for chest, and from this point you can make out the swan's wings extending on both sides of its body. If you're able to get away from city lights and out under a really dark, moonless sky, you'll see that the swan is gliding right down the middle of the Milky Way's softly glowing river of starlight. By now you've figured out that the Summer Triangle isn't really a constellation, but rather an easy-to-spot trio of bright stars. But it turns out that two small, dim constellations lie inside the Summer Triangle. If your sky is decently dark, you can look for them. The first is called Sagitta, which is Latin for arrow. Slide your gaze one fist higher up than Altair, then look for four stars in a compact line with two very close together on the right end. That's the feather of an arrow that points to the left. There's actually a fifth star marking the arrowhead, but it's quite dim and harder to spot. The other constellation is tucked directly below Albireo in the head of Cygnus. It's called Vulpecula, which is Latin for little fox. All the stars of Vulpecula are quite faint, so you'll have to take my word that there's a celestial fox here. In fact, there's nothing even close to being shaped like a fox among these faint stars, although this constellation name has been used since the 1600s. Okay, time's up. Have you found the star that's brighter than Vega? Well, if you look west, well above where the sun set, there's a star that looks just about as bright. That's Arcturus, the anchor star in the constellation Boötes, and technically it does outshine Vega, but only by 5%. Actually, Vega probably looks like the brighter star, both because it's overhead, where there's less haze, and because Arcturus is slightly reddish. That's about it for this month. If you want more tips for viewing the night sky, check out our website, skyandtelescope.org, which offers great star and planet-gazing activities. If you haven't already subscribed, you can find this Sky Tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And please leave a rating or a review. It'll help others to find the show. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, please do check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of Sky and Telescope, a division of the American Astronomical Society, and is produced by me, Kelly Beatty. Next month, we'll spend a little more time with the lyre, eagle, and swan, and explore the myths and legends surrounding them. Until then, I wish you clear skies.